one with the other, and judge her by the standards which profess to measure such things, and brow and chin said purpose with unmistakable emphasis. She was not in her purposeful mood now. Rather was she uncertain and irritable, the nearest emotions to fear she knew. She let the curtains fall back until they overlapped, and walked across to the fireplace, glancing at the tiny clock. The saloon was half lit, the wall sconces were dark, but the big lamp on the table near the settee glowed redly. This room bore evidence of money well but lavishly spent. The greater part of its furnishings would one day reach the museums of millionaire collectors. Three pictures that hung upon the apple-green walls were earmarked for the National Gallery. As she stood looking down into the fire, there was a gentle tap at the door, and the butler came in. He was a tall man, rather portly in his way, a man of double chins and an unlined face. He carried a small salver in his hand, a buff oblong in the centre. Lady Wrayham tore open the envelope. It was dated from Constantinople, and was from Wrayham. She had been expecting the telegram all that afternoon. Wrayham, of course, had changed his plans. In that sentence was epitomised his life and career. He was going on to Basra, and thence to Bushire, to see the interstate oil wells, or the sights of them. He was expensively apologetic for two closely written sheets. If he could not return before April, would she go on to Cannes as she had arranged? He was awfully sorry. He must have said that at least four times. She read it again, folded the pink sheets, and laid them on the table. The butler was waiting, head slightly bent forward, as though to catch her slightest whisper. She did not look at him. "Thank you." "Thank you, milady." He was opening the door when she spoke. "At Drew's, I'm expecting the Princess Bellini and possibly Mrs. Gurdon. I will have tea when they come."
"Very good, milady."
The door closed softly behind. She raised her sombre eyes and looked at the polished wood of it with a curious listening lift of her head, as though she expected to hear something. But the butler was going slowly down the stairs, a quizzical smile in his eyes, his white, plump hands sliding in and over one another. He stopped on the landing to admire the little marble statue of Circe that his lordship had brought from Sicily. It was a habit of his to admire that Circe with the sly eyes and the beckoning finger, and as he looked, his mouth was puckered as though he were whistling. A sharp rat-tat on the door made him withdraw from his contemplation. He reached the hall as the second footman opened the door. Two women came in out of the murk. Through the open door he had a glimpse of a limousine drawing away.
"Her ladyship is in the drawing-room, Your Highness. Shall I take Your Highness's coat?"
"You can't," said the first and the bigger woman brusquely. "Help Mrs. Gurdon out of hers. Why you wear such horrible contraptions, I can't understand."
Mrs. Gurdon smiled largely. "Darling, I must wear something. Oh, thank you, Drews."
Drews took the transparent silk coat and handed it to the second footman. The princess was already stamping up the stairs. She pushed open the door and walked in unannounced, and Lady Wrayham, standing by the fire, her head pillowed on her arm, looked up, startled. "I'm so awfully sorry. Push the light, Anita. The button is by your hand." "Well?" The Princess Anita Bellini struggled unaided out of her tweed coat and threw it over the back of a chair, jerked off her hat with another movement, and tossed it after the coat. People who saw Anita Bellini for the first time gazed at her in a little awe. There was a certain ruthless strength in every line, every feature. She was something more than 50, and was just under 6 feet in height. The masculinity of the powerful face was emphasised by the grey hair cut close in an Eton crop, and the rimless monocle which never left her eye. Between her white teeth, she gripped a long amber holder in which a cigarette was burning. Her speech was direct, abrupt, almost shocking in its frankness.
"Greta?"
She jerked the end of the cigarette holder towards the door.
"Being fussed over by Drews. That woman would ogle a dustman. She's that age. It is a horrible thing to have been pretty once and